Public Safety Finance Committee will come to order. Thank you all for coming. Today we'll be hearing bonding requests for training centers. You should have information about the request in your packets, and we also asked the authors of these bills to answer some questions that came out of the statewide master plan for fire and law enforcement training facilities, and you should have copies of all of that in your packet as well as the master plan and the follow-up plan from 2000. We're going to first hear from Assistant Commissioner Tim Leslie to give an overview of those reports. I think this really came out of this. I remember my first term in the legislature, we just had had myriad proposals to training centers from all over the state, and they were all worthy proposals, and it was the desire of the legislature at that time to have a more methodical way of deciding where those centers should be and the criteria that we should use to choose those sites, because they're expensive. So I'm sure you'll go over the history and that criteria. Right. We don't. We have a quorum? Okay, I guess we do have a quorum. So I would like someone to make a motion to approve the minutes of February 14th and March 29th.
Mr. Chair, I'll make that motion first.
Senator Bigham makes the motion to approve the minutes from February 14th and March 29th. Is there any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion prevails. Then I think we're ready. Does everyone have their master plans there? Okay. Commissioner, do you want to begin? And you have a slide till obviously.
Mr. Chair, members, yeah, I'm going to have a, for those of you who are visual learners as well, I'm
going to... Can I just get both of you to introduce yourself for the record, please?
Sure. Tim Leslie, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Public Safety.
Don Deckering, State Director for the Fire EMS Safety Center out of the Office of the Chancellor, Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. And I was one of the task force people that put the 99-2000 stuff together.
Very good. Welcome, gentlemen.
It's kind of a search to find him, but we found him. And then Steve Mangelko in the back there was also on the group, but he's since retired, but back to help the security here at the Capitol and the state office building. My purpose is going to be to brief the members of the study, its methodology, and its recommendations, and I'll just walk through that with the PowerPoint slides here. The authority for the study and the committee assignment was from 1998 session laws, Chapter 404, Section 21. The senior packet essentially established an advisory committee of 15 members that was to advise the Commissioner of Public Safety about components of project design and content of what a master plan would be for fire, police, and first responder training centers. The methodology was public meetings, a statewide survey, tours of current facilities, a review of the current landscape, obviously, and then a background research. They contracted with the Management Analysis Division, the Department of Administration, who did the research and wrote the report. Some of the recommendations from that 1999 study, of course, was safe and realistic training. They wanted everything to be safe for those who attended. The technology should aid the training. They were pretty forward-thinking already back then. The technology would be a key to the future. And then ultimately there was a redirection of this committee, and I'll get to that. That's in report number two, actually. Since 99, the legislature has funded five sites, and those are indicated here on your map. Marshall's a little bit too far east there, but it's a little further west. But other than that, that is exactly what's been funded. I have testified to this already, and if you need more information on that, I can go over that. From the first report, the location priorities were use of existing facilities. That was highly emphasized in the report. Cost effective, accessible, and maximize the use of those existing facilities in other capital investments. So they really made that a point. Unfortunately, accessibility, cost effectiveness is in the eye of the beholder. So that has to be defined. It's not been defined by the group, but it gives you an idea of what they were looking for. On page 4 of your report, please note the priority for facility development on page 4. They list 3 priorities. Number 1 was increased use of existing facilities. Number 2 was to expand or upgrade existing facilities. And the last priority was construct new facilities. Melanie, I'm not sure if you got it or not, but I use a checklist that I developed to help me examine these. And you can throw in the garbage if you want, but I offered it to the committee. I offered it to the Senate as well for their use if they need it. Additional new facility priorities. Areas without access to a training facility. They need local letters of support from the collaboration efforts that they would be seeking. Other cities, other counties. Is there food and lodging nearby? And what's the future expansion consideration? And what disciplines are impacted by that position or location? One of the recommendations was to talk about and explore mobile equipment. Mobile equipment was something that was suggested for areas of the state with too low of density of population to actually build a facility. And Minsky was a key component in that because that's one of the things they do, is they provide mobile props for firefighter and police officer training. And I'd like to turn it over to Don Beckering to comment about that.
What we have found is that, particularly in the Northwest and parts in the Northeast regions of the state of Minnesota, the distance to travel to get to a site is prohibitive. Also, it becomes very, very non-productive, non-cost-effective for volunteer fire departments to get there. And so what we have found is that providing the opportunity through mobile props that can be brought directly to the community has been very, very successful. Back in 99, we already recognized that, and we put into the report. But at that time, we had, I believe, 12 to 13 trailers to do different types of training activities. Today, we have over 40 trailers throughout the system that can do anywhere from burn training, a confined space, some high angle or technical rescue type activities. And again, it serves the communities very, very well to be able to bring it right to the fire department. The other advantage is they can practice on their own equipment, or utilize their own equipment, and that's also something else that we truly do appreciate.
Today, the recommendation was regarding design. Again, this group back in 99 talked about the use of technology significantly, and they wanted the use of technology to help aid development of realistic training and to provide the safety for those who are participating in the safety and the training as well. And they wanted scalability. I just have a little thing here on the side. It just shows what's out there now in the year 2008. We have those kind of software programs where you can scale it up, scale it down, make it a big deal, make it a small deal, and test folks. And that's, I think, what they were getting toward. And I'm glad they talked about it. They didn't understand how far it would actually go. I guess I would have bought Apple, too, if I had known at the time. Some of the recommendations, 3 different areas for ownership. They talked about consideration given to collaborative ownership. They wanted not just a county, but a combination of cities and counties going together on this. In terms of operation, multi-purpose facilities were encouraged. And in terms of funding, what is the marketing plan and how are you going to pay for operational costs? That should be included in the plans as well. I'm going to move to report number 2. And that came out of Session Laws 1999, Chapter 216, Section 7, and Sub 6. They directed the Department of Public Safety to reconvene the task force, and they called for specific site recommendations, among other things. Actually, 7 specific things were requested to come out of Report Number 2, and those are listed here. Which counties and cities are you talking about? Why they should be located in those regions? What collaborative efforts are out there? What's the funding match scheme? your feasibility of providing the training in your application. Is there a current, is there a need that is not being met by current facilities, or, and what other issues are available? The recommendations from report number two, the state should consider 8 regions and have 1 training site per region. And they must meet the regional training needs of that region and clearly show collaboration. I quote from page 3 of that report, quote unquote, interested parties must demonstrate collaboration to meet the region's training needs. And from page 4, clearly define multi-jurisdictional commitments to the proposal. Clearly they were after collaboration and multi-jurisdictional involvement. Training proposals must include a plan to meet the requirements, again, local, state, and federal, not just narrowly focused, but broadly focused. Clearly define those multi-jurisdictional commitments that are required of the region where the training center exists. And we maintain that 50% capital, 50% from the state, 50% from the sponsoring locale, and then 100% of the operational cost is borne by the recommended collaboration. Other things that should be included in the training proposals that you will see, identifying the service area, identifying the student population, the plans for mobile training, which we've referred to, and the exclusive specialized regional training that this center would accomplish. This is when we began to look at this in 2006, and up till this point is when we started to see a little differentiation between police and fire. The distance that firefighters can travel, especially volunteers, is much less than what law enforcement can travel. Volunteer firefighters don't want to jump into their rigs and drive an hour when they only have 3 hours to train. Now you've taken away 2 hours of their 3-hour training regime for that week or that month. And it doesn't seem like a very efficient use. And that's where the mobile equipment piece came in. And we continue to hear that from our firefighter stakeholders. These are the 8 regions that were identified in the report. The Northwest, Northeast, Central, Southwest, Southeast, and then Metro has 3, 1 East, 1 West, and 1 Metro South. You can see the color is pretty clear there. Other recommendations about online learning, distance learning. They wanted to acknowledge that that's something that's expanding. Again, 9 years ago, they were acknowledging the fact that this would be expanding, and it is. However, there's some skills you cannot do online. The hard skills of firefighting, law enforcement, some of the things that ambulance folks do, you just can't defer that to online. Handcuffing, defensive tactics, shooting, fighting fires, breaking down doors. I mean, those kind of things you must do in a center. You cannot be simulated. I think I'm on page 6 now of the second report. And really those, when I testified earlier, I talked about the tier training concept. Tier 1, Tier 2, Tier 3. And they acknowledged that back in 1999 and 2000 in the report. How they say it is a little different than how I say it, but ultimately local training sites are there to accommodate basic training needs. That's your Tier 1. Specialized training at the regional level, that's your Tier 2. And exceedingly specialized training at a statewide level, that's your Tier 3. Now, I provided to the committee a further definition of what Tier 1, 2, and 3 sites are. I'm not sure if that made it in your packet or not. Gives better examples of what we mean, the group means by that, and hopefully that'll help you define what those tiers mean as you make your tough decisions.
Okay, Les, but I just have a quick question. If this committee and the legislature accept the Camp Ripley project as a Tier 3 training facility, would be now and into the future the tier 3 training facility? Or would there be potentially others?
Mr. Chair, members, no. That would be the site that the state would fund as the tier three site for this state, and probably for some states that could never afford to do it. I'm not sure what North Dakota and South Dakota's plans are, but I'm not sure they would ever endeavor to do that. They need to come and participate in our center.
And when you say other states can participate, do they pay the state a fee for providing that facility?
Well, they would pay a user fee just like anyone else that would attend training there, a nominal fee to cover the cost of operation.
Very good. Thank you. Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner, I don't think it was clarified yesterday whether it would be paid to the state or if it would be paid to the military.
Commissioner Leslie, can you clarify that?
Mr. Chair, members, Representative Murphy, I don't think we've come that far to decide exactly how those costs would be shared. I'm hesitant to go there, General Kelly, but we've talked about the fact that if the building that's built in the CACTAP, in the facility that the military is spending $19 million on, becomes owned by the military, they bear the cost then of the operations of that. Now, when I said that to General Kelly, his comment was something like that, Jim. And so I hesitate to say it. I am saying it. So those kind of things have left to be figured out. There will be a state cost, because if we have state folks that are operating it, there is a state cost, but there'll be a lot of federal folks there as well. So there should be a federal cost as well, but it's not going to be borne out to the state, I don't believe. I can invite the general up here.
Chairman, and would the shared cost be shared on a population number or a number of users for the military and the number of users for the state of Minnesota firefighters and that are non-military?
Commissioner Leslie.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, I have not gone down that path of how we're going to pay for the operating costs. Ultimately, we've come up with some kind of operational cost, and then as the use grows, it would be probably going down, the cost would be. That's all I can envision. The figure we have now that's in your packet is significantly higher than what we anticipated would be to run this. Because like I mentioned in testimony yesterday, that that we use a training cadre of folks to do the training. We would not need to staff it to a high level. We'd share the wealth, we'd share the pain among our first responder community.
Senator Murphy.
No.
Any other questions at this point? Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, members, I'm done. Okay. Questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, has DPS provided to you a prioritized list of training center requests? And is that available to us as committee members also, and we'll get it down the road at some point?
This is only the governor's recommendations. Which you have in this packet.
Thank you.
So we're going to have to evaluate all the proposals, I'm hoping that this presentation and this guide that's in the master plan will help us in that effort.
Thank you.
Any other questions of the commissioner? Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Mr. General, I would like to talk about yesterday and my mistake.
Okay.
It was a shoot building, not a burn building. That was so close, and I'm sorry. I looked at my notes.
Thank you for the clarification, Representative Murphy. Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Beckering, and thank you, Commissioner Leslie. You'll stay around this afternoon. I'm hoping we're not going to be too late. I apologize, especially the rural members that have to... Any rural members? Oh, Mr. Murphy. We have a long drive, but this was the only time we could do this in order to get this to the Capital Investment Committee on time. Thank you both for your testimony. We're going to now hear House File 502, Representative Baird, and Representative Simpkins. Would you...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move House File 502 be before the committee for consideration.
Okay. Representative Simpkins has moved that House File 502 be considered for possible inclusion in the Public Safety Finance Bonding Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee.
Welcome, Representative Baer.
The House File 502 that you have in front of you with some supporting materials, I hope you found them in your packets there, regards the regional training facility being built in near the city of Jordan in Scott County. I have a few folks here that I would like to introduce who would speak briefly to this issue, but it was really good for us to sit here and listen to the presentation by the Department of Public Safety regarding the regional training facility concept, because it's, I'm pleased to report that the project that the good folks in Scott County put together seemed to be a solid score on every one of the bullet points that were mentioned, including a couple that they didn't bring up that I think we'll talk about here in a moment. Some of you have heard this presentation before, because this has been an investment that the state made a couple of years ago in basically a $10 million project where we're requesting the state fund about 40% of it, actually 38%. Because of the regional significance and nature of the project, the state has invested $1 million so far. So we're back with House Bill 502, which requests the balance of $3.2 million, which will help complete the build-out of the project, which is already partially operational and underway, I believe you'll find. For your consideration, House Bill 502 is before you. I'd like to introduce first to speak Mayor Jack Haugen from Prior Lake. Mayor Haugen's been the mayor of Prior Lake now for, I think, your third term, and is one of the founding members and former chairman of a group called SCALE, the Scott County for, Association for Leadership and Efficiency, an award-winning group that a lot of counties around the state are taking note of, because we do a lot of things collaboratively in Scott County, including projects of this nature. So, members and Mr. Chairman, if I may, I'll introduce Mayor Jack Haugen to speak a few moments on this issue.
Mayor, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
I'm Jack Haugen, Mayor of Prior Lake, Minnesota. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, certainly appreciate the opportunity to share a few minutes with you today. And I want to reflect back in 2004, SCALE, which was just referred to as the Scott County Association for Leadership and Efficiency, which is made up of every city in Scott County, 8 cities, 11 townships, and 5 school districts, responded to the need at that time of the regional public safety community for training facilities. And at that point, we funded a study to identify and assess the training needs and gaps within Scott County and the broader region to determine the feasibility of developing a regional public safety training facility that could serve the needs and fill the gaps within the region. The needs and gaps identified in this study very closely identified what we talked about or what we heard in the past presentation presented in the 1999-2000 Minnesota Department of Public Safety statewide master plan. It also demonstrated the need for additional training opportunities and facilities for emergency management, public works, public health, and public officials within the area. Through the analysis, it was determined that a historic building and site already owned by Scott County met the needs of this priority. It provided existing buildings that could provide excellent class and conference room capacity. In addition, the facility could also provide for food service, laundry, and lodging for trainees. Beyond that, it was located in a rural area, had municipal sanitary sewer facilities, and very good access off of U.S. Highway 169. making it easily accessible for public safety personnel within Scott County and the region beyond. 2 years ago, as was indicated, representing Gale and numerous public safety agencies throughout the area, Scott County proposed a $9.9 million project with the state contribution to be $4.2 million. Only 42% of the project and well below the 50% state match limit. We had and continue to have many inquiries and letters of support from public safety agencies from Mankato to St. Paul, Hennepin County, Dakota, Le Sueur, Ramsey, and Nicollet counties, as well as South Central Technical College with campuses in Rice and Blue Earth counties. This truly is a regional entity. The project at that point 2 years ago received a $1 million grant as was indicated. Now, following the commitment of the state's $1 million at that point, we moved quickly to demonstrate our local commitment to this project. The project was modified to be completed in two phases. A joint powers agreement, a memorandum of understanding, was developed and approved by Scott County, the seven cities within Scott County, and also the Shotgun Bluff and Sioux community. Those documents created a governing board that I'm pleased to chair. Scott County committed its property and existing buildings with a value in excess of $1.5 million. We provided $5 million in capital dollars to match the state's then $1 million commitment and to permit the facility to move forward aggressively. We expended $150,000 to bring fiber to the area. We spent an additional $160,000 for improvements, upgrading the elevators and those sorts of things. We established and fully funded an operating budget for the facility and hired both a full-time manager, who coincidentally his first day is today, and a maintenance worker. The match of local money to state money to date is 87% of the projected expenditures to date. If the current bonding request is approved, the match of local money to state money will be more than 62% of the total expenditure. With that, Representative Beard, to Rob Bowe.
Yes, Mr. Chair, if I may, I introduce Mr. Rob Bowe. Rob was our former chief deputy of the Scott County Sheriff's Department. He is retired, but has been a valuable asset in moving this project forward.
Mr. Bowe, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Rob Bowe. I want to talk to...
Is that B-A-E?
It's a B-O-E.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the photograph behind me was taken just before the snow came. It shows our project. Interesting story on the photograph was actually taken by one of our operators for our earthwork equipment. He's rather proud of the project. He's a private pilot. Flew by and snapped this picture. But it does show the existing historic building and then the changes we've made for the training center. In phase one, we've done all the grading and leveling of the soil and the drainage. We've got our holding ponds in place both for phase one and phase two. We built a pond or a reservoir that allows us to fill that pond with water. We can draw our hydrants down off of that and pressurize a water system for our firefighters to work from. Because we've got 1 foot in the city and 1 foot in the county throughout our region or in the country, we also have a non-pressurized system so our firefighters can work with the concept of drafting water where it's not provided by a pressurized pump or a hydrant. We've constructed our parking lots and we've relocated all the utility lines both for phase one and phase two. We built two separate shooting ranges early on in our study. We realized it was critical that the ranges be separate so that they can operate simultaneously. These are ranges that are safe not only for the shooters, but safe for the neighborhood and safe for the environment. At the end of the day, we've got every single bullet accounted for in recycled rubber at the end of the ranges. One of the ranges is a tactical range that's been expanded to allow officers to shoot in a realistic situation, not just straight ahead, but using both sides of the range, and it's high enough where they can bring two squad cars in at a time. Phase two funding would allow us to do that realistic approach to the longer rifle range to allow more sideways movement and more movement of officers within the range. We've remodeled portions of the historic building, including one portion which is remodeled into being what's called a dirty classroom, a classroom where our responders can come in with dirty boots, wet clothing, get a briefing, and then go back out and run their exercises. We've also remodeled one of those rooms to be a defensive tactics room. Talked briefly about the fiber optic that's been brought in and it's being brought into all of our classrooms. And we remodeled one of the classrooms for a high-tech firearm simulator, very, very interactive and very realistic, as where we work with our officers not just on accuracy but on the whole decision-making process. This simulator also is adapted for jailers, corrections officers, and even probation officers as they learn how to de-escalate situations both verbally and on the other end of the continuum with force. Phase 2 funding would allow us to purchase driving simulators. That room is already done. It's already been remodeled. Driving simulators not only for the fire trucks, but they can be adapted for transit and our highway workers as well. We want to add technology to our main classroom to bring it into a higher level of inter-office conferencing and electronic connections to the outside world. We want to provide a dispatch component to the center, not only for training dispatchers, but so that that component can operate as a dispatch center for larger scale exercises going on at the center. We spruced up the two large assembly rooms. We have to be careful because they're listed on the National Register of Historic Places, so they did not get modified much, but our two major rooms are getting a quick once-over, a fresh paint, and will continue to be on the National Register. We finished our five-story tactical building. That's the large concrete structure, sometimes called the fire training building. We put the infrastructure in so that building can house four fire burners. These burners utilize propane. Propane is safer for us to use. We can control the fire. We can kill the fire immediately, and it's environmentally friendly. It burns so clean, we actually manufacture smoke at the theater smoke at the site, which allows the training instructors to regulate the amount of smoke, depending if it's a, to be honest with you, if it's a new crew or an experienced crew. We have laid out and done the infrastructure work for the future outdoor fire props, including a propane prop. Again, we have a lot of propane moving throughout our region, as well as for a flammable liquid prop, all that are environmentally friendly. We've also designed that tactical building to have four burners, but we only put two in phase one. Phase two funding would fund the other two burners. Excuse me. We also want to add a confined space and a hazmat area and a collapsed trench space. These are calls that our responders face throughout the region, and we have a site set aside for them. I skipped over a part. I want to go back to the tactical building. It's more than just a building with fire burners in it. It meets the needs of police and fire as well. It has numerous breakable walls, breakable doors, doors that open from the left, doors that open from the right, swinging in, swinging out, all the issues that our responders face. It also has vertical shafts, an elevator shaft, and an area for the high altitude or high angle work that you heard about earlier. We also are proposing a spot in the basement for cell extraction and cell training. Our corrections officers, this is probably one of the most dangerous pieces of their job, is when they need to go into a suspect who has barricaded himself in the cell and they need to extract him out. We propose that we would, if the phase two funding, we would have a full cell extraction training in the lower level. We also want to construct a rail prop. This is a rather unusual site that running right through our front yard is the Union Pacific main line between the Twin Cities and Mankato. We have a lot of rail moving through our region, and our goal is to construct a rail prop area where we can train on rail incidents. And finally, we want to remodel the second floor of the building into the, which is still existing very much as a 1920s hotel, to remodel it into current old college dorm standards to allow overnight guests. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, I have one other gentleman we'd like to see, or we'd like to speak to the group. That would be the Carver County Sheriff, Sheriff Bud Olson.
Sheriff Olson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I appreciate being here. My purpose for being here is really just to let you know what my issues are so that you understand why this is such a great collaborative multi-jurisdictional process. The last time I shot in a sand pit, it got dozed over, and it's a beautiful business district up in Maple Grove. Today I have close to 100 deputies that I am shooting in a sand pit in Carver County. And we did our own local study to figure out what we were going to do for the future of trying to train all our different disciplines in Carver County and do use of force and do outdoor-indoor range, do all the things we have to do in Carver. And this scales project came forward. And I only represent just one entity in this, but I know that we have multiple entities involved in this. And without this type of project for me, I quite frankly don't know what my county board of commissioners would do to fund all the training needs that I have in my sheriff's office. So this one is near and dear to my heart only because I have limited space in a metro county to site a facility like this. So this is a winner in my book. This is a home run. A couple of things that I want to touch on that I know about this project, why I support it. First of all, the work that went behind this project. I know they went to every township citizen in the region where this site was going to be sited. And they went and sat at their kitchen tables and talked to them about the impact. They went then to the regional partners. They went to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife. They've done a lot of work here, and this group has really taken the time to put this project online and really put it in an area that will be beneficial and have great value for the metro area, but also for the local agencies that are going to be involved. A very big point. Also, when you talk about online and you talk about some of the technology challenges that some of these projects will have, this project, the fiber is already there and it's owned by this local project. So when you talk about working with the colleges or working with this online learner, there's a capability there. There's classrooms to do it, and we've got the facility. So it offers us some great flexibility here. Finally, I just want to say that from my perspective as an elected and having to look at scarce resources, a project like this for police, fire, public works, public health, all the entities that need it, fire, EMS, all of us that need to get together and do some of our emergency management or emergency preparedness training, there won't be a nicer facility in the region to cover what we need to get done. So I appreciate your support. I hope you can help us fund this. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Anything else, Representative Bear?
Mr. Chairman, yes. So Mayor Haugen has just a couple of concluding remarks before we answer any questions, if you wish.
Very quickly, if I could, Mr. Chair. I think our plea is to let's start with what we finished. Back in 2004, this project began. In 2006, the state provided the $1 million of assistance. Last year, it was on the final bill that was defeated. The 4 points that perhaps I'd point out. This project, when completed, and we're already beyond phase one, moving to phase two, will be the only regional facility in use or being proposed in the state of Minnesota, the only facility in the metropolitan area that's fully able to meet the requirements of a true tier two regional public safety facility that can meet all of the multidiscipline training and exercise components. Due to its location, it's easily accessible to more public safety providers than any other regional facility in Minnesota or being proposed. And with the exception of Camp Ripley, we have the capability and capacity to provide more training opportunities to public safety providers, again, than any other facility in use or being proposed in the state of Minnesota. And finally, we will have provided to the state the largest match of local funds to any other facility either in use or being provided. So in summary, we're just asking that the state continue on the $3.2 million bonding request and finish together the state and scale started several years ago. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a quick question, and maybe I missed this in your testimony. So is the city or is scale providing $3.2 million in matching funds, or where is the local match for this? Trying to understand your handout here.
Actually, Mr. Chairman,
I'll
speak to the precise numbers, but Scott County itself is funding out of a $9.9 million, all but 4.2. Quick, what's the math on that? 0.7 and 4.8? It's the 62% or more than 60% of it is actually local dollars that are coming into the project, yes.
I didn't see this on the handout. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Representative Diskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mayor Haugen, you mentioned a number of entities. Has the Minnewaukitan Sioux Tribe contributed financially to this project?
Yes, they have. They have a number of scales. There's a formula we determine. I won't go into all those details, but they create or participate the same as all the cities in the county do.
And I just want to make an announcement, too, for those people testifying, that you have to go through the chair because we're taping this, and we have to have you identified for the tape. That's just the protocol. Representative Diskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Mayor Haugen, how will the Shakopee tribe benefit from this facility?
Mayor Hogan.
Mr. Chair, Representative Vincent, all of the entities in Scott County and the surrounding region will benefit because of the magnitude and diversity of training that's available to them. The basic Tier 1 training is in, perhaps Rob Bull can correct me if I say anything wrong from the technical aspect. The Tier 1 training is provided on that local level. The Tier 2 or the regional level, certainly the needs of the Shocking Walk-In Sioux and their business enterprises, et cetera, would be tremendous benefactors of this training.
Mr. Chairman, if I could add this to that, to Representative Bisson's first question, every city in Scott County has contributed financially also to the project. In addition to Scott County, that's where the million came from for the local match. Also, maybe it's not well known here that the Midlothian community has established their own fire station, EMT squad, and there's no police protection. They still hire that from Prior Lake, City of Prior Lake, and pay the City of Prior Lake for that. But as such, they've been enthusiastic participants in this, both from a financial and a input perspective.
Representative Cole.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to express my support for the proposal. I want to thank Sheriff Olson, who's not part of Scott County, but is in fact my sheriff, and is here, I think, showing, although it's an adjacent county, is at least illustrative of the regional impact that a project like this is going to have. So I appreciate the fact that my county is willing and interested in participating in a project like this. Isn't the only area where Carver and Scott County have worked together. It's an extension of the collaboration that exists already. But you know, I would note it's not just Carver County. It's it is a truly regional project, and I appreciate Scott County stepping up to the plate. I would note as well, the vast majority of my district is Carver County. This facility, if I'm not mistaken, if my recollection is correct, is within the small portion of Scott County that I represent. So I appreciate Representative Beard doing the hard work on this, and I really do hope that the committee will consider moving this forward. It's got to, you know, as the mayor said, let's finish what we've already started. This is a project that's well underway and well needed, and I appreciate Representative Beard doing the hard work.
Thank you, Representative Close. I have a question. I don't know if it's for you, Representative Beard, maybe not, but Commissioner Leslie, at some point, that if this was funded at a $3.2 million level and you could complete the project, would this then be the Metro South facility that would include McLeod, Carver, Scott, Southern Hennepin, and Southern Dakota counties as a training mm-hmm. facility?
Mr. Chairman, someone else was going to have to speak precisely to that, because I looked with quite a bit of interest whenever Mr. Leslie's slide came up, and I think they have a Metro South, I think it was a bright green color, if I'm not mistaken. I think the fact of the matter is that this regional training facility already reaches a little bit beyond that, including all of the areas they've already asked for. I know Police Chief Harrington in St. Paul has expressed a great deal of interest in bringing officers out for training. Goodhue County, Rice, Le Sueur, and Blue Earth County have also expressed the interest in either buying time or renting the facilities to keep their folks certified and sharp. But how that's going to fit in exactly to the map that's been suggested by the Department of Public Safety here for a Metro South, I don't know. We've included all of those folks already and then some.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I'm interested in that question also, so maybe if the Assistant Commissioner could give us a thumbs up, and I know we're being recorded, I'll respond to his verbally to his thumbs up or down, but the question is, would this be considered the Metro South Tier 2 training facility once it is completed?
Mr. Lester, let's get this on the tape.
Yeah, exactly. Mr. Chair, Representative Biskin, actually this would be the second in Metro South. Edina is also in Metro South. Edina is a Tier 2. It's a collaboration between Edina, Eden Prairie, Bloomington, the cities. They share the operation in the Minneapolis St. Paul Airport. They share the operational class there, and then they rent out space. It's a burn tower, it's a shoot house, it's a target range, It's technically a Regional 2. It's not, would be not as expansive as this, obviously, the proposal that's on the table now, but it is in the same realm, and I believe it is 22 miles from Scott County.
Well, Commissioner, isn't this what we, I mean, I think it's a great project. I'm just want to make sure are we duplicating a facility here, that if you're saying we have one in Edina that could be used by people from Scott and Carver, McLeod counties in Edina. I mean, are we duplicating duplicating a facility here?
Well, you're going to be, Mr. Chair, members, you're going to be duplicating portions. What Scott's saying is they have a little bit of larger scale regional food center that would accomplish, have more bells, whistles, and things that that doesn't exist in Edina. So you're really kind of talking about balance, scale, and you're talking about transportation, how many folks go to Edina currently, how many folks would not go to Edina anymore and go to Scott County if Scott County was available. Those are the kind of issues you're facing with that, and then, of course, who's going to pay for it.
Very good. Any other questions of the commissioner or the testifier? Mr. Bull, Mayor Haugen, and Sheriff Wilson, thank you for your testimony. Representative Baird, do you have any closing comments?
And then to say, Mr. Chairman, thank you for the opportunity to be heard again on this. I know that last year the House Bonding Committee did make a tour of the facility. The Senate Bonding Committee has been there, Capital Investment Committee has been there a couple times. And we're pretty proud of the project also. I know, just in closing, one of the things that as I participated as the legislative observer for scale in their discussions and their angst is maybe not the word, but it was difficult to maintain certifications for volunteer fire departments and so on when we had to travel to Minneapolis, Bloomington, or Edina, where the facilities were booked, the scheduling became an issue, the ability for people from the far reaches of the county to spend the night or to make time after work to go over and do their training was an issue, which is one thing that gave rise to this whole discussion about the regional training facility in the area that actually had overnight facilities. So small town departments could come up, spend the night if they needed to, work on the weekends, and we'd actually have time, space, and so on for multi-departments, multi-jurisdictions to be on site at one time, which maximizes, of course, training hours and the ability to use the facility. Obviously, I'm sold on it. I think it's a fantastic idea and a great investment for the state, but I'll be happy to encourage you to consider it for funding this year. Thank you, members.
Thank you, Representative Baird. The chair will lay over House File 502 for possible inclusion in the Public Safety Finance Bonding Bill. Thank you again, gentlemen. Representative Davney, House File 2830. And then we will hear the Homestead County project.
Mr. Chair, is the page available to deal with the spaceship enterprise stuff up at the front here?
This is
we're beyond my ability. Thank you.
The chair will move House File 2830 for possible inclusion in the Public Safety Finance Bill, bonding bill, I should say. So, Representative Dabney, you've got your everything set. Do you want to introduce your testifiers, or how do you want to proceed? Do you want to make an opening statement?
I want to proceed first by thanking you for the opportunity to hear this bill, and thank the members for their attention. This the Emergency Operations and Fire Training Center for the City of Minneapolis in the region is a dual-use facility, unique in its structure and multi-jurisdictional in its utilization. I was struck as I was sitting here during the Assistant Commissioner's review of the work that's been done over the years on looking at priorities for siting these facilities and what facilities should be like, and et cetera, how closely this facility ties to the recommendations in terms of utilizing existing facilities so it's cost effective, use of technology in realistic training settings, multi-purpose facilities, and specialized training at the regional and state level. I'm joined today by Ms. Christy Rollwagen, Deputy Director of Emergency Preparedness for the City of Minneapolis, and Assistant Fire Chief John Fradel. In addition, Ms. Karen Lowry-Wagner from our Intergovernmental Relations staff is available for questions, as is Councilmember Betsy Hodges. With that, Mr. Chair, if I could, I'd like to hand it over to Ms. Rollwagen, who can walk through the proposal for you.
Welcome, Ms. Rollwagen. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Christy Rollwagen. I am the Deputy Director of Emergency Preparedness for the City of Minneapolis. I'm here on behalf of Director Rocco Forte, who is vacationing this week. Thank you for your opportunity to be here. We brought some pictures along to start to tell our story a little bit here about our request for $8 million bonding dollars for our current Minneapolis Fire Department training facility and our desire to co-locate our Emergency Operations Center at the same site. On August 1st, when we responded to the bridge collapse, we operated out of our current Emergency Operations Center, which is in the basement of City Hall. And there are a lot of faces in the room here today that were with us that night and for 20 days going forward as we dealt with that disaster in our community. And our current Emergency Operations Center is woefully inadequate, to say the least. It's like a broom closet, to tell you the truth. And we had upwards of 100 to 150 people in our Emergency Operations Center the night of the bridge collapse. Karen is going to put some pictures up for you to look at, and they're also in your PowerPoint that should be in your packet. That night, we knew that we had a small EOC, and we've been working for 10 years on the city side to secure a capital improvement dollars to build a new facility. And we have secured those dollars. The city has committed to put $5.6 million into building a new Emergency Operations Center. Our goal is to build it out of downtown Minneapolis, up at our fire training facility, which we could then use the EOC space as a dual-use facility and improve the classroom space that we have currently up at our fire training facility. You can see how crowded it was the night of the bridge collapse and the subsequent days. Many people were in there. They had to bring their own laptops. We needed to bring in a printer, put on the floor. We didn't have even a television in there. We didn't have enough whiteboard space to write on. At certain points, we'd be erasing the boards and taking pictures of what we wrote down just so we could capture it before we could put it into a situation report. And it was just, the space is just too small and it is lacking in technology. So at this point, we have secured city-side funds to build a new Emergency Operations Center. We have secured 2007 Urban Area Security Initiative grant dollars to offset the start of the technology for a new Emergency Operations Center. And what we're here asking for today is some bonding money to go forward with the expansion of the Emergency Operations Center to include housing, apparatus bays, and storage area for our state-owned regional assets that we house in the City of Minneapolis through the Fire Department and our Police Department. We currently have we have the statewide bomb squad. The Minneapolis Police Department provides those services on a contract with the Department of Public Safety. We also have the structural collapse rescue team, the heavy rescue team for the state of Minnesota in the City of Minneapolis Fire Department, as well as it's a collaborative effort of surrounding fire departments, St. Louis Park, the Minneapolis St. Paul Airport, and other jurisdictions. We have a lot of heavy rescue equipment and vehicles that just we don't have any apparatus bay to store them in, and our space in our fire stations is quite tight, and these vehicles are quite large. So we're looking at building a facility up at our current existing fire training site that would serve as a better use of classroom space, because currently our classroom, can you put those pictures up here? Our current classroom space is actually in a double-wide trailer. And that's where we train our firefighters. You can see a picture of it on the board there. And what we're hoping to do is build that building and add on an apparatus bay for all of our state resources, as well as some enhanced technology. We have housed up at our fire training facility. We actually have a state-of-the-art facility as we speak. We have, I think, close to a Tier 2 facility when you're talking about tiering out your facilities. We have many hazardous materials training props up there that are state-of-the-art. Our burn building is state-of-the-art. We have actually a mocked-up meth lab that we train our law enforcement and firefighters on so that they know what the signs are in our, to look for in a meth lab. And then finally, we also have our training site for our collapse rescue program in the state of Minnesota. This is our current classroom space. On average, we can sit about 30 people comfortably in that classroom space, and we're looking at expanding that, as well as making that classroom space available as an emergency operations center and moving our emergency operations center out of downtown Minneapolis. You can see our burn building here. I'm going to turn it over to Assistant Chief John Fiddle. He can speak to you about some of the uniqueness of our technical rescue and our hazmat that we have up at our tower.
Welcome, Chief. Please identify yourself.
Thank you, Assistant Chief John Friedel. Mr. Chair, committee members, thanks for the opportunity to speak to you today. A little bit about our facility. It's unique in the sense that when we initially invested in the facility, we chose to invest in some of the various props that have been spoke about today with the burn building, hazardous materials props, technical rescue props. We have gotten a facility now that can and covers all the disciplines in terms of the technical rescue, from fire suppression, hazardous materials, confined space, trench rescue. All those props are up and established and working at this time. And I would say that as a member of one of the team leaders on Minnesota Task Force 1, we've got 244 members now trained on that team, and they were all trained at this facility. And obviously, they responded to the bridge that night. And it was certainly a true asset for me the night I was on the bridge. So it speaks well for the facility. It has a lot of capability. Our only shortcoming in the facility, like Christy's mentioned, is our classroom facility. And in terms of our training outside, the props are in place. They're up and running. They operate. A myriad of communities come in at this point and use our facility a lot. We've got lease agreements signed with a lot of different communities around the metro region who come in and use our facilities for a myriad of training opportunities. The shortcoming, obviously, is our classroom space, which probably minimized our ability to effectively expand our training capability in terms of this classroom. And you're going through some more pictures. You can see some of the technical rescue props and simulations we've got established that many of our task force members have gone through. Here's an example of a trench rescue facility. The facility itself is up, it's running. It has a lot of capability in terms of all the disciplines. We are just really lacking in the classroom space. And obviously, you saw the pictures of our EOC tonight at the bridge. And Christy and her folks were down trying to work in that EOC space. We had probably roughly 125 people working in a room that was probably 12 by 20. So it's a very, very difficult space, and it's something that would be greatly appreciated if we started to get some support in the facility. It truly is and has been for many years a regional facility. There's been many, many people have trained in our facility as the chief of training for many years out there. I saw some of the folks who spoke today, a lot of their members have been to this facility and use our burn building, use our hazmat props, our technical rescue props. And now, since we've expanded in the area of technical rescue in Minneapolis and having a heavy rescue responsibility, as you can see the picture of this on the overhead at this time, this is just one of the vehicles that we have that's a state asset. And we've got three or four or five more vehicles like this that with the new facility to include an apparatus bays would allow us to have a pre-mobilization point for a pre-deployment of our team. So if the state asset was called out, I would have a place to pre-deploy the folks to give them an initial debrief or a brief before they do deploy. Right now we do not have that. We are currently planning to use our facility, but obviously to put 200 and or less people in a room like we have to try to do a briefing would be very, very difficult. And I guess that's primarily, I guess, on the train seats.
Mr. Chair, committee members, we currently have the match that we need with the city's investment of the $5.6 million in capital improvement dollars. We have a current grant for technology with the prospect of receiving more technology dollars for 2008 and 2009. We do know that we are an urban area city again for 2008. That was just announced last Friday. And going forward, the city of Minneapolis will be requesting more technology dollars for our Emergency Operations Center, and that will be our funding initiative when we submit our investment justification for the 2008 grant cycle. And then finally, we do currently have a state investment already in place in our training facility, and that is the equipment that we house for the state of Minnesota through the Minneapolis Police Bomb Squad and our Minnesota Task Force 1.
Any further testimony?
No, Mr. Chair.
Representative Dabney, I'm not sure if you can answer this or not. Just trying to get it, you know, as you can probably can see that the committee's concerned about duplicating training centers and throughout the state of Minnesota, and you list that the training centers in adjacent to Minneapolis as the Edina, Scott County, St. Paul, and Ramsey County currently with facilities. So what would be different about this facility, and would you assume that this project would be would draw in firefighters and other emergency personnel for training to Minneapolis?
Mr. Chair, I'll make a brief statement and defer the depth of the question to others at the table. But this already is a regional training facility. I believe there's 35 jurisdictions, including the Minnesota National Guard, who currently train here. A new emergency operations center and fire training facility will enhance the experience that those students have currently. So I don't see this as duplicative of other existing fire training centers as much as enhancing a currently valued asset by neighboring jurisdictions. I don't know if Ms. Rollwagon or Chief Cradle have more to say.
Ms. Rollwagon.
Mr. Chair, committee members, just like it was said earlier, we already are a regional training facility. What we are looking for is to relocate our emergency operations center up there. We are going to do that with our $5.6 million in local City of Minneapolis capital improvement dollars. What we're hoping to do is leverage that with our federal grant funding stream that we currently are receiving through the Urban Area Security Initiative grant, and hoping to leverage some state bonding dollars here to go ahead and build out now what we want to build out later. And we're hoping to use money from the state to protect and house our state assets.
Commissioner Leslie, can you come down again just so we just have some clarification here? So I'm looking at the master plan again, and it does speak to improvements of existing facilities. So give us some guidance as a committee about, you have several facilities in the metropolitan area who either this year or in future years will be coming in for expansions. Did the task force address that issue specifically about how to prioritize expansions to regional facilities?
Mr. Chair, members, I don't believe so. They talked about the priority system as improvements to current facilities, number one, expansion of current facilities, number two, and constructing new facilities, number three. They didn't offer a whole lot of guidance beyond that. One piece, of course, is that there has been no state funding heretofore contributed to this site. And so that would be a question for the committee to address. Are you going to start to now upgrade facilities that you've never contributed state money towards in past years? That would be one question.
Questions from the committee? All right, then President Dabney, I will lay over House File 28 30 for possible inclusion into the public safety finance bonding bill. Roll Logan and Assistant Chief Bretzel, Representative Dabney, thank you for your testimony.
Sheriff Hamer, members, thank you for your time and attention.
Representative Liefling, are you ready? Representative Liefling, you want to move your bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would move 2236 for possible inclusion in the capital investment bill, and I do have an author's amendment as well. This could be an oral amendment.
Okay.
Yeah. And that is that I need to amend House Bill 2236 to change the amount of the request. It's currently $3,250,000, and I want to change it to $3,650,000. So that would be on line 1.8 and on line 1.17. And, Mr. Chair, that is in accordance with what is in the governor's bill.
So it's the Representative Liebling moves to amend House File 2236, so on line 1.8, strike $3,250,000 and insert $3,665,000 and on line 1.17, strike $3,250,000 and insert $3,665,000. Is there any discussion on the amendment? All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? That motion carries with my vote.
And my vote.
Representative Liebling, do you want to just some introductory remarks? Or?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Well, I won't take a lot of time in introduction, but this is the public safety, regional public safety training center proposal that would be located in Olmsted County. Proposal is for a Tier 2 training center for the entire Southeast Minnesota region. And this has been something that Sheriff Forkart, who's with me, who's the Chief Forkart, who's the Olmsted County Sheriff, has been working on, and this proposal in one form or another has been here before the legislature since 2000, I think. And so this is not in any way a new idea, but I think that this does fit very nicely into the statewide plan. It truly is a regional center that is not duplicative of anything that's anywhere nearby. And with that, I'm going to let Sheriff Forkart present the proposal, and also have with me Brian Staska, who's the Director of Public Safety and Fire Services for Riverland Community College. And he's here, and I think he'll make some brief comments, too, about the regional nature of the proposal.
Sheriff Forkart, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Steve Forkart, Olmsted County Sheriff, members. It appears that most of you have found that handout, just in case you haven't, that's the one we'll be referring to. In a way of giving you a little bit of history about this project, it actually began in 1999. When a group of firefighters from our area came to me and police officials from Rochester and said, well, we're really in a bad way because we're running out of farmhouses to burn down. And when we do find a farmhouse to burn down to do our training with, we have asbestos abatement issues and other safety issues as to whether or not the floors, the integrity of the structure is sufficient for us to do our training in. And then when we do have a building that's presented to us, we can use it once and everybody can get one or two or three repetitions, and then it's burned down, and we're done until somebody else donates another building 6 months or 18 months later. And, of course, that schedule doesn't begin to match when you acquire new people and need to train them or the need to repeat training for people on an annual basis. And so we did all of what you've heard from Scott County back in 1998-1999, did a regional assessment, formed a regional committee, had representation from fire services, law enforcement services, detention services across the area, including involvement from state agencies and, at that time, Federal Medical Center, Federal Bureau of Prisons in Rochester. and in fact the National Guard at that time. So there was a considerable collaborative effort to put together a plan, and we did hatch a grandiose plan for a facility to be located on the campus of the Rochester Community and Technical College that would have a airplane fuselage, a helipad, a bays for EMS ambulance units, bays for fire rigs, classrooms, computer centers. And it was going to cost about $18 million. So we came to the legislature in 2000 looking for some planning money in the bonding bill, and we're not successful. So we had to get more realistic, and we had to get realistic quickly. And so we scaled back to the three most essential components that were a part of this big plan, which was a burn facility, a driving range, and a weapons training facility. And we went with phase one, which was the burn facility for 2002, because that was the one that had the most dire need. Now we're 4 years out from when we began this process. And for 2002, 2004, 2006, we came back with that same proposal three times, and for various reasons, we were never able to get it all the way done. So this year, we kind of went back to the drawing board, and we've come to you with all three facilities at one time, because the need, while it was dire in 1998, is acute at this point. Our firefighters just can't find a place to train. They can't find buildings to burn down. Rochester Fire Department last year was burning down motel cabins on the outskirts of Rochester that were smaller than the size of a single car garage in order to practice being in a building with a self-contained breathing apparatus. And downtown Rochester has buildings that are 30 stories tall, but they're training in old motel cabins that are the size of a single car garage. So the same need exists throughout southeast Minnesota. And in the packet, you will also see letters of support. We have networked this project very thoroughly throughout southeastern Minnesota. The Southeastern League of Municipalities is strongly in support of the city of Rochester. The county of Olmsted has agreed to take the lead relative to standing up for the local matching. They may try to entice some other local governments to help them with that, but if they're unsuccessful in that regard, they're willing to do the entire local match themselves because they see the need to get this thing in the ground and get this capability. The District of Sheriff's Association has endorsed it. The Southeastern Minnesota Chiefs of Police Association has endorsed it. All the requisite collaborative endorsements are in place. And indeed, I would point out that to date, the Rochester Fire Department, the Rochester Police Department, and my agency, I have invested in this somewhere north of $25,000 for three separate pre-design plans. So the local commitment to this is quite extensive in the history. The site that has been selected at this point is a site that Olmsted County has purchased southeast of Rochester, contiguous to Highway 63, and within a few miles of Interstate 90, Highway 52, and US 14. So it's very easily accessible for the entire region, and very close to lodging and restaurants and all the other infrastructure support that would be necessary. In addition to that, we've had the collaborative efforts with Brian Staska from the Riverlands Community College, who's responsible for a good share of the in-service training for fire departments throughout the area, and he will speak in a moment on the need for a building for burn practice in addition to the mobile component that Deputy Commissioner Leslie spoke of earlier. And last but not least, we have partnered with RCTC's law enforcement program throughout the region to acquire simulators. We have both a driving simulator and a shooting simulator that we have all contributed money towards so that we can have it available in our region. So you can see in the southeast in our region. So you can see in the southeast region, we've made a considerable commitment at the local level to bring this together, and now, frankly, we need a site, and we need this level of facilities. If you look on that very first page, you see three pictures I've included. And the weapons training area is really quite simple at this point. We have one facility in the Rochester area, and that was built over 20 years ago. It's a point-and-shoot static kind of range that does not allow for any of the lateral mobility that we need to train officers in this day and age. So what we're proposing also has high-density housing is developed up around it in the last 20 years so that we no longer use it at night without generating a good share of complaints. So what we're proposing is simply an area with a berm around it, about the size of a football field, and we will contribute the resources and assets necessary on a local level to finish that out. So what allows us to do is bring a vehicle in, or bring a mobile home in, They'll bring in the various props that we need to simulate real-life circumstances. Right now, as Sheriff Olson testified to in Carver County, I'm doing that in a quarry down by Stewartville. They'll be dragging a mobile home in, do exercises for a week, and then have to drag the mobile home out because the owner of the quarry needs to quarry it. They've been generous enough to let us use it, but it doesn't provide for the ongoing kinds of training and the repetitions we need so that people can get enough practice so these actions become instinctive. And last but not least is the driving range. We need that primarily, or for all of the different disciplines, including our public works people that drive dump trucks and snow plows. But the people that really feel that need are our volunteer EMS folks. They don't typically drive around in one-ton ambulances, and we call them out in the middle of the night and blizzards and all other kinds of harrowing weather conditions, and we expect them to execute their operations flawlessly. And right now throughout southeastern Minnesota, they're practicing on quiet community streets at 7 o'clock in the morning on Sundays because that's the only time that they can find a street that aren't populated that they can actually practice on. And of course, that doesn't allow for practicing at night, which is when they're usually called to execute their duties. So those are the three sites we've gone, or the three components we've gone with at this time. We have future plans to co-locate our emergency operations center along with the public works maintenance facility and this center in this piece of ground southeast of Rochester. Our emergency operations center is currently our backup dispatch for Homestead Rochester, and as such provides a training function. We also have plans to co-locate our jail cell extrication kinds of training. We just aren't to that point yet, so we can't say that we will currently have all of the Tier 2 components in place. However, the level of skill building that this center is aimed at is that Tier 2 regional level of skill building. I'll have just a couple of comments before we conclude, but I would like Brian Stasker to talk to you a little bit about how he sees this center contributing to fire training throughout southeast Minnesota.
Welcome, Mr. Stasker. Please introduce yourself for the record.
My name is Brian Stasker. I'm the fire training coordinator for Riverland Community College down in Austin, Albert Lea, and Owatonna. I think a regional training center like this in an area that already has a proven track record of good training, strong training, it would only thrive. We know that we don't have the buildings. We do have some of the mobile training units that they talked about in earlier presentations. My college happens to have 12 of those units in different degrees, but the burn trailer we currently use is a semi-trailer that is how can I say this? On a yearly basis, we have to make it past DOT inspection because it's getting so old and dilapidated. And there are areas of concern inside that trailer that we have to worry about the trailer actually burning up because it's getting so old. But our region, the Southeast region, is one of the strong training regions in the state. This last year, last fiscal, we did 33,000 training hours with firefighters in our region. The interesting point about that is this February I surpassed that number already, and so we're going to exceed 33,000 training hours with our firefighters, that just tells me that our area is a strong, it has a strong will to train. If we had a facility like this, our firefighters, EMS, and law enforcement officers and members would all, I'm sure, attend because they're already coming to our need when we need them throughout the area. So they're starving of this training. We've proven that by holding some events with the community of Rochester before. They're willing to travel to Rochester. We've got, over the past number of years, we've had letters of intent for youth from our fire departments, our Southeast Fire Department Association, which represents all the fire departments in Southeast Minnesota, and even a letter of intent from what they call Tri-County Fire Association, and that is the farthest three counties, Houston, Winona, and I believe Fillmore counties down there, stating they would be happy to travel to Rochester too to use this facility, being the farthest ones out of that area. So having a fixed facility is a great opportunity. The mobile units serve a purpose, don't get me wrong, but having a fixed facility, as you saw in Scott County's presentation, gives us multi-level. And we can't do that with the trailers. It gives us larger rooms. We can't do that with the trailers. And so having these big facilities, being multi-training units, not just for fire, but for SWAT entries, for search and rescue, for the firefighters, for EMS providers using stairs and bringing their cots and stretchers down the steps is invaluable. I hope you consider a training facility such as this for the Olmsted County region, and we would, be more than happy to utilize it to its full extent, with that.
Thank you, Mr. Chester, for your testimony. Sheriff, do you have anything else?
Yes, if I may, Mr. Chair and members, if I could refer you to page 13 of my handout, I'd like to point out the number of volunteers that are going to be served by this. Much of rural Minnesota is served by volunteers. And in Olmsted County alone, somewhere between 60 and 70% of the participants that will use this facility on a regular basis are volunteers. And throughout the southeastern area, you can see that fire and EMS combined are going to be a number in the area of 4,500 people that need access to this facility. And then if you could refer to the final page, shows a map of the state of Minnesota and where these facilities are already located. And I apologize for the fact that it didn't really come through clearly, if it's not in color, the key that's located on the left. You'll see that there's nothing available in southeastern Minnesota. And I'd like to speak for just a moment, if I may, to the whole issue of duplication, because I know it's a concern here and justifiably so. But as I've spoken on this topic throughout the Olmsted County and southeast region, it's become apparent to me that most people think we have this training capacity in our area already. They don't understand that we're borrowing quarries and burning down cabins to train our professionals and our volunteers. And also don't understand, because they don't necessarily have this requirement in their jobs and careers, that in these disciplines, everybody has in-service training, and it usually constitutes your butt in a chair at a seminar of some sort on a weekend or on a work day, learning through your eyes and ears. And fire and EMS and police and sheriff do all of that. But I do one more thing, and a close analogy I can come to is professional sports. Now, truly, these folks don't have the same level of athletic prowess as for a professional athlete. But when you consider what we're asking them to do and when we're asking them to do it, and the perfection with which we're asking them to execute their actions is very similar. For example, we know that when your adrenaline kicks in a very frightening circumstance, that the first thing that happens is your respirations go through the roof and your heart rate goes through the roof and cognition is diminished tremendously. We know that to be successful in that kind of a situation, you have to rely on instinct. When you are a firefighter and you're going into a burning building and you're going to the second floor of a farmhouse that is so filled, choked with smoke, you can't see your hand in front of your face, and you're going to the second floor to rescue the baby in the bedroom, and your self-contained breathing apparatus malfunctions, that's not the time to start noodling through how that thing works so you can fix it. You're in a life and death situation, and the response has to be instinctive. When you're a law enforcement officer crouching to try to crawl into your car to avoid getting shot, and your automatic suddenly stovepipes, you need to instinctively tap and rack. You don't have time to think about, oh gosh, what was it that I do when this round gets hung up on the ejection? And so the only way we accomplish that is through repetitions. And the only way we can get the level of repetitions necessary to build that kind of instinctiveness is through accessibility. And we accept that when it comes to sports. None of us would consider having our children or grandchildren go out for some kind of little league or school sports where the coach would say, we're going to play three or four times a month and we'll practice twice a year. Won't be a problem. And we build sports facilities all over our communities, and I'm all for it. I'm an old jock myself, and the benefits are tremendous. But we don't think twice about building enough facilities so that not only a lot of kids can play, but that a lot of kids can play frequently enough that they can get enough repetitions that the actions become instinctive so they can be competitive on Saturday. And yet, what we do with our law enforcement officers is we take them to the range four times a year. And what we do with our firefighters is we put them in their self-contained breathing apparatus in a simulated real-life situation anywhere from once to three times a year. And then when the life-threatening circumstance comes along and we expect perfection out of them, which is what we do, we say, go get them, champ, and I hope it works out. not providing a level of practice that they need. And shame on us, probably, for not demanding more facilities and more capability. We're not budgeted for it. We're not staffed for it. But when you think of duplication, I'd like to ask you to think of it in terms of the fact that every community of 10,000 people or more doesn't think anything of laying down an indoor sheet of ice for hockey or laying down a million-dollar stadium for their high school football team. We seem to accept that. But when it comes to this level of physical training for our firefighters, then we're worried about whether or not the catchment area is going to overlap by 25 or 50 miles. Again, we can't build facilities everywhere, and I know that there's a competitive nature to this by necessity. But I ask you to consider these requests in terms of, while you may see a different level of sophistication with the presentations that come in front of you, and some have better looking drawings, and some can show that they're further down the road of collaboration, when you see these presentations from Princeton and from Grand Rapids and from Marshall and from Scott County and from us, please know that the only reason you're seeing so many of them is because the need is dire, and it's dire across the state. And I really ask you to become a part of this partnership and help us provide the training necessary so that the people that protect us can save themselves. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Just a quick question on the action of Olmsted County in their resolution. It doesn't specifically say that Olmsted County or any of the partners in this project will pay the match, except but we do have your testimony that day. And so is there a reason that was not in the resolution?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Over the years, I've made the attempt to go throughout southeastern Minnesota to small towns and counties and ask for X number of hundreds of thousands of dollars for a local match, and I haven't been successful. And we need to get something in the ground. So I went to Olmsted County, and I had my county, and I said, will you guarantee the local match? And then provided we are successful with bonding money, if we want to go forward and try to get other people to, other entities to get involved, great. But if not, will you be the backstop so that we can get this thing in the ground? Because we know that once it's built, their firefighters, their EMS people, and their law enforcement officers will come and use it. But getting that upfront commitment for hundreds of thousands of dollars over the past 8 years, when we've come through the revenue shortfalls that we've experienced, it's just not been there. So I went to Olmsted County and I asked for that backstop commitment and received it.
Are there questions of the testifiers? Then Commissioner Leslie, so this will be would this be considered the Southeast Region Tier 2 training facility?
Mr. Chair, members, correct. This would be the Southeast Regional Tier 2 Training Center.
And Commissioner, this project is the only Tier 2 project that's in the Governor's Bill. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, members, that's correct.
Any other questions? Okay, then. Then Representative Liebling, the Chair, will lay over House File 2236 for possible inclusion in the Public Safety Finance Bonding Bill. Sheriff Borchardt, Mr. Staska, and Representative Liebling, thank you for your testimony. Do you have any closing comments, Representative Liebling?
I think very proud to be from Olmsted County and have such a great representative as Sheriff Borchardt here, and just to say that he's done such a great job of representing our county. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Liebling.
The final
bill on our agenda is Representative Rudolph, House File 2672. Representative Coles, do you want to move the bill? Representative Coles moves the House File 2672 be considered for possible inclusion in the Public Safety Finance Bonding Bill. Representative Rudolph. I should note to the committee also that two of the bills that were on the agenda have been moved to Tuesday, Representative Seifert and Representative Saylor's bill. Representative Erdahl, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. Appreciate the opportunity to be here. Realize that it's a Friday afternoon. I'm certainly cognizant of your time, and we shall be brief. We live in perilous times. You know, public safety has risen to public consciousness. It should. Just yesterday, there was another senseless shooting at the Northern Illinois University. The type of facility that we'll be talking about today would be helpful to show people how to react in instances as happened yesterday. I will also comment that you've heard proposals that are not exactly the same as what I'll be talking about, but similar, but they are in metro geographic areas. This is a proposal that's in greater Minnesota in a small town. The city of Annandale has a tactical training center that is a valuable training resource for law enforcement. They attract law enforcement trainees statewide and nationally. Annandale needs to update and improve this valuable facility. That's about $164,000. It's a bargain deal for you guys. I have with me the police chief of the city of Annandale, Jeff Hearn, also the city administrator, Mark Casey.
Mr. Chair.
You please introduce yourself for the record.
Chief Jeff Hearn from Annandale Police, city of Annandale.
Welcome, Chief.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee. What I want to talk to you about today is it's a unique training facility, what we have. I don't know if any you committee members were at the training center on the tour, but I just want you to kind of visualize the scenario that we deal with quite frequently as law enforcement. A couple may come home, find their door kicked in. They're going to notify dispatch. They'll send an officer or deputy. Maybe it's two deputies or two officers will arrive. They're expected to clear the house and make sure it's clear so you can go carry on with your life. A live fire shoot house allows officers to train with the equipment that they carry each and every day. The next best step that we take from the live fire training is scenario-based training with FX rounds, which is a marking cartridge that you shoot out your weapons that you carry each and every day. The shoot house draws people in regionally from the state, all over the state. St. Louis County Sheriff's Department from Duluth was just there last week. One of the handouts, one page there is the facility users. Another one is facility activity. Representative Erdahl just spoke about active shooters. We live in a day and age where we have a lot of violence. We lost 181 officers nationwide last year. Again, the sheriff from Olmsted County did a super job about speaking on necessity of training. We expect our people to go out and do this job, but I think we give them the tools, but we need to carry through with the training. I think we owe it to our citizens and our state as well as our families, so we as police officers and deputy sheriffs can go home every night. This facility, the training center, allows the officers to work on navigational skills. One thing, just for, so the committee understands, a lot of the officer-involved shootings occur in low-light situations. I've been a police officer for 18 years, and until we had the shoot house, it's very difficult to find a training building where you can shoot live fire and kind of work those scenarios. So we're asking for $164,000 for upgrades. The city has put $328,000 into this facility that was paid by the general fund. Put this business plan together and presented it back in 2000, and that's where we're at. These upgrades are necessities at this point to make our facility even better and keep it up and running for the additional agencies that train each and every year.
Thank you for your testimony, Sheriff. Have you heard all of you? Actually, unless you have questions about this, we will trust your judgment. Again, this, we do feel this is a very important proposal for our part of the state, for Annandale, and to look forward to the resolution that you will pass on for likely inclusion.
Any questions of
Well, Mr. Chair, I would just note I'm absolutely shocked, and I don't know if I should be excited, embarrassed, but Representative Erdahl here has a proposal for $164,000. I've got one downstairs and a little bit for $4 million. I don't know that Representative Erdahl has ever come in under me on any kind of fiscal matter, so way to go, Representative Erdahl.
Representative Erdahl. When Ron Paul takes three of the four districts in your precinct, can I just assist you? Okay. Well, thank you all for your testimony. The chair will lay over House File 2672 for possible inclusion of public safety finance bonding bill. Representative Lilly, did you want to say something?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the opportunity. I'd like to just break for a second here and introduce a group from North High School and North St. Paul, and one of them is my son, so maybe he could come up and give a 5-minute speech if that's all right. Thank you.
Well, welcome. Can I just Commissioner Leslie, can you just come down for one final? I just have one question. I don't feel like I asked a question very well about the Minneapolis project, and there's several other training facilities near Minneapolis. You were saying that project has not received state funding in the past. Have the other facilities in the surrounding areas, have they received state funding? And that's the question.
Mr. Chair, members, I think I spoke to this maybe with a member of your staff at some time. What I try to discern when I examine these is the purpose, and so it's sometimes difficult to determine if we're building something, we're looking for money, so we're going to add a training room so we can get to be a training center, or we're trying to get a regional training center to provide training. So that's the difficult part that sometimes is hard to discern when you're reviewing what their purpose is. I'm not saying that Minneapolis is doing it. I'm not saying that others are doing that. But I have, over the course of time when I reviewed them, felt that we need a new fire station. Let's put a training room in the back and call it a training center. Same with a police station. Put a training room in the back, and we'll call it a regional training center. So I'm not sure if I'm answering your question, but those are some of the considerations that need to be made before we fund these. What is the state interest? Is it really a training center that they're trying to accomplish here, or are they trying to look for bonding money to help them build something that's probably a local responsibility?
I probably should have asked that when Representative Dabney was here, Mr. Chair, but I was just felt like I left that hanging. We have some difficult decisions to make, and that's a fairly significant request that they're making. Representative Cole.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'm glad you brought the Assistant Commissioner back down. I wanted to follow up just briefly on the discussion with the duplication or overlap issue with the Edina and the Scott County facility. I stepped out in the hallway after the folks in Scott County were here. I wanted to make sure that I understood where the department was coming from and make sure that the record's clear, because I understand from talking to the folks from Scott County that the Edina facility is interested in partnering with the Scott County facility, and I want to make sure that the record is clear about the department's position. Does the department consider the Scott County proposal to be duplicative, or is it complementary? As I understand the Edina facility, and I haven't been there myself, I'll be the first to admit, but I understand that they have an indoor shooting range. They don't have an outdoor range, which is what Scott County's proposing to do. They don't have facilities for some of the equipment operation and things of that sort that the Scott County facility will do. So if you could just speak to that a little bit more. I want to make sure I understand where the department is coming from.
Commissioner Leslie.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cole. That's a good point, and as I stepped back to my chair, I was informed by Mr. Beckering, who of course is my local expert for this original study, that a regional center doesn't have to be contiguous. And he brought that to my attention. So in effect, you could have a regional center be one part in Edina and one part in Scott County. And as long as they don't duplicate each part in separate locations, they would not be considered duplicative. You would not have a fire tower in Edina and a fire tower in Scott County. What they explained to me in the hallway as well was a range at Edina, but they don't have the ability to use long rifles in Edina, so that's something they would build in Scott County. And then they would collaborate together to share the facilities in the broader region. And then I think that meets what the committee was looking for in the study back in 2019-99.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Leslie, thank you for that. I just wanted to make sure that we were clear. That was something that I wasn't aware of, and when you raised the question about the whether this was duplicative, I just wanted to make sure that the committee had the opportunity to hear that. I guess we can quibble over what the word is. I would suggest that the Edina facility is complementary to the Scott County facility for the reason that Commissioner Leslie just described. They're providing different services and, in fact, are looking to partner together so that they can provide that full range of services at both locations. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. It's been closed. Any other questions or comments? Commissioner Leslie, thank you very much for your frank testimony, and we will need you back again, I guess, at our next meeting, because we have two more facilities that we have not talked about. So we will be meeting next Tuesday at 8 a.m. in room 10 and hear the crime lab bills, and then we'll reconvene at 6 p.m. Here in room 5 to hear the remaining bonding bills. So anything else? Very good. Thank you very much. Meeting's adjourned.